Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. The United States is the world's largest generator of plastic waste, and for the first time, we have data on how that waste is affecting marine animals in U.S. waters. An important new report by Oceana, the world's largest ocean conservation organization, found evidence of nearly 1,800 animals from 40 different species swallowing or becoming entangled in plastic since 2009. Of those, a staggering 88% were listed as endangered or threatened with extinction. And the numbers, as the authors of the report say, are probably much higher. According to Dr. Kimberly Warner, the report's author, it's not just the items that first come to your mind, like bags, balloons, and bottle caps. These animals are consuming or being entangled in everything from zip ties and dental flossers to those mesh onion bags you see at the grocery store. Dr. Warner says we can only expect these cases to increase as the industry continues to push single-use plastics into consumers' hands. The Oceana study echoes another important study published in Science Advances, which reveals that the exportation of plastic waste abroad has masked the actual U.S. contribution to the plastic pollution crisis. Using plastic waste generation from 2016, the study calculated that more than half of all plastics collected for recycling in the United States were shipped abroad. 88% of exports went to countries struggling to manage, recycle, or dispose of plastics. And between 15 and 25% was low value or contaminated, meaning it was unrecyclable. So if you take those factors into account, the researchers estimate that up to 1 million metric tons of U.S. generated plastic waste ended up polluting the environment beyond its own borders. Many, many groups say that we desperately need policies that reduce the production and the use of single-use plastic. So what will it take to implement strong policies? Joining us to talk about these reports and needed policy changes are two guests. Dr. Kimberly Warner is a senior scientist at Oceana. She's the author of the groundbreaking report, Choked, Strangled, Drowned, The Plastics Crisis Unfolding in Our Oceans. Hi, Dr. Warner. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me to join you.
Well, it's great to have you. We are also joined by Kara Lavender Law, a research professor of oceanography at the Sea Education Association in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. She is the lead author of the study detailing the United States' contribution of plastic waste to the land and oceans. Hi, Kara. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have both of you. We have done so many shows about plastic waste over the years. And I just wonder what you both think about where we are right now. Kimberly, it seems that the problem is just getting worse. What explains that?
Well, I think a number of things. One is that we've been exponentially producing plastic. And most of the plastic that we do produce goes to the market of packaging. So that's been increasing just about exponentially from the time it was introduced in mass marketing in probably the early 50s. And we've seen a lot of that plastic build up in the ocean over time, both in the sediment and the water column. And I'm really happy that Dr. Law is on the phone call as well, because she's taken many people out to the ocean to look at all the plastics that's there. So scientists are still trying to understand the extent of the problem and how deep it goes. But every time we hear more research, it seems it gets a little worse. Certainly the number of animals that have become entangled or ingested plastic, the larger plastic that's covered in our report, seems to have increased over time. And that would seem to match the data that we've been receiving, that actually plastic is building up in the oceans over time as well.
Right. Dr. Law, in simple terms, there are more people on the planet. People are buying more stuff. So that's a simple way to look at it. But how else, what else would you say? Why is this problem just getting worse?
Well, I think it's a complex problem. We all absolutely rely upon plastics in our daily lives. If you just take a look around wherever you are right now when you're listening to this broadcast, you'll see maybe you're sitting in your car with lots of plastic parts, or you're sitting at your desk with a computer. Maybe you're eating a snack out of plastic wrapping. And in these times of this global pandemic, we really realize that we need these materials to be safe, for good hygiene. But I think we also, as Kim said, have been increasing the amount of plastics that we use, and maybe not always in ways that we need to use them. So a piece of the problem is consumption. And then on the back end, these materials were designed and really changed the world we live in by their innovation, but they were designed without thinking about what happens when the user is done with these plastic items. So we don't have a really good plan for how to deal with all of the plastic waste that we generate. And so as we use more and more plastics for more and more applications, or if we just become bigger and better consumers, we're faced with even more plastic waste that we have to manage. And as a consequence, a portion of that will necessarily end up in the environment.
Mm. And Kimberly, putting the show together, we've been thinking about how much more we're using because of COVID. When you think about all the takeout, the takeout food, and then according to reports, COVID triggered an estimated global use of 129 billion face masks, 65 billion gloves every month. And then you think about all of the hand sanitizer that we're all using comes in plastic bottles. What are your thoughts on this, Kimberly? I mean, this is a year of people just buying more and more of this stuff.
Yes, that's been one of the things that has added to this pandemic, I'm sure. But, you know, I think, as Kara said, there are, you know, some uses that I think people feel safer during this pandemic using, but you know, we can use reusable face masks. We can wash those and use them again. I think when we're ordering food, we can ask for to opt out of having the plastic utensils delivered with our food. A lot of us are eating our takeout from home. And I think there's things like when we order packages from delivery companies, instead of going to the stores, we can ask that those packages come with, you know, less plastic. Ask the delivery company to wrap it in paper or cardboard, something that could actually be recycled effectively or reused. So I think the problem existed before the pandemic, and it will remain after the pandemic. And while we're all suffering through the pandemic, you know, we'll see what the final tally is on plastic in the ocean, but these are things that we will need to address once we're through the pandemic as well.
Right. And what would you add to that, Kara?
You know, I think I've shared frustration with lots of people who work really hard to reduce the amount of single-use plastics that we consume, and we're just in a moment in time where we have to accept to a certain level some of the plastics that we have to use. So as an example, when the pandemic first started, we really weren't sure about how the virus was being transmitted. I know at least where I live, the grocery stores wouldn't allow us to bring our reusable bags in. And I have a photo from the trunk of my car from one of these massive grocery store outings. And it was like a stake in my heart with all of these, you know, single-use plastic bags. But thankfully, as we've learned more about the virus, the stores now allow you to bring in your bags. And I completely second what Kimberly said about choosing reusable and washable items, masks and gloves where we can, and just recognizing that this is a very painful period of time in the pandemic, but we will get through it, and we don't want to lose sight of the fact that, you know, we can act now to reduce pandemic related plastics that we're using, but after this ends, we really should put even more focus on reusables. And And, you know, we don't have to permanently change our way of life, you know, once we get past the pandemic.
Well, let's talk about both of the important studies that you worked on. First off, Kimberly, let's talk about the study you worked on. Oceana came out with this. It's such an important study. And actually, we just got an email from Jeff, which is a great first question before we dive into the study. Jeff writes, Can you talk about how these plastics actually move into the environment? How did they escape the waste streams that is the most common method of plastics removal? So how does plastic go from land to ocean?
I'm happy to take a stab at that one. So there are a number of ways that we can lose our trash, and it really depends on where you are in the world. So in developing nations, there may not be the waste management infrastructure available. People just simply don't have garbage cans and garbage trucks and recycling bins. And so in those cases, people have to do something with their waste, and they may deal with it by burying it or burning it or just dumping in open dumps. In the United States, we do have a very good waste management infrastructure. We do have garbage cans and garbage trucks and recycling bins. But I think all of us have had that experience where the candy wrapper accidentally flies out of your hand, and maybe you're on a street or maybe you're on the beach, and that candy wrapper could end up being blown by the wind into a waterway, which ultimately drains to a river or to the ocean. Certainly, like a beach toy left on the beach could end up washing ashore, or fishing gear lost at sea could, will become derelict and drift around in the ocean. So there's accidental littering. There is, of course, deliberate littering, even in the United States, and illegal dumping. And we did estimate those in our new study. And collectively, those added up to about 1 million metric tons of plastic ending up on U.S. soil, in the environment, or potentially into the ocean, depending on where it's lost. So I think there are different aspects to this. I mean, there are certainly parts of the country where it's harder to recycle, for example, to even find collection for recycling. But even in a place like the U.S. where we have the infrastructure, we do sometimes act badly or accidentally lose some of our trash to the environment.
Right. In fact, we've done many shows with Sharon Lerner of The Intercept, who reports on this. And one of her recent pieces, she writes that in 2015, the United States recycled only 9% of its plastic waste. And since then, the number has dropped even lower. Less than 1% of the tens of billions of plastic bags used in the United States every year are recycled. Can you talk about what explains that, and what can we do to improve the recycling system in this country?
Recycling is hard. So, if you just think about your daily life, and even in my house where I study this for a living, my kids will say, "Mom, does this go in the blue bin or the trash?" And a lot of those items are on the fence, because technically a lot of the plastics, most of the plastics that are made for packaging, for instance, or many of them, I should say, are recyclable. If you collected them and they were clean, you can melt them down and turn them into new products. But we're getting increasingly more complex types of packaging. So if you think about multi-layered pouches, for example, these are composites of materials that, in order to be recycled, would have to be separated back out to their individual constituent parts. So there are simply, from a functional standpoint, these packages may perform better in the sense that, say, food can be transported farther or last on the shelf longer. But at the end of its life, that packaging actually can't be recycled. Even if it can be recycled, we have to collect the material and we have to sort it. So your soda bottles or water bottles are made of one type of plastic, PET, which has a recycling code number 1. And that has to be separated from HDPE, from your milk jugs. And then even within the HDPE, the clear milk jugs have to be separated from the colored detergent bottles. So it's kind of an interesting system that we've set up in that, we've instituted single stream recycling in a lot of places to encourage people to put materials in the recycling bin rather than in the trash. But when that material goes to a materials recovery facility, it has to be separated back out again, which is a lot of work. And then if it's contaminated either by food or contaminated by materials that didn't belong in the blue bin, often that makes that material unrecyclable. So it's a bit of a complex situation, because of course we just keep making more different types of products with different materials and different additives, but it makes it harder to separate them out at the end of the line.
Hmm. And I'm sorry, this is Kara speaking, right?
That's Kara. Yep.
Okay. Thank you. And Kimberly, what would you add?
I would just say that there's been a lot of push to try and recycle our way out of this problem. A lot of it fronted by, I'd say, the plastic industry. And, I think they bring out the let's recycle more of it, let's do it better every time someone pushes back and says that's not going to solve the problem. So, you know, it's a sad fact. You know, I mean, there are many items that I would love that, you know, could be reused another time before being recycled. There's other ways if we could perhaps design packages better for recycling instead of just, you know, not thinking about the end of the life aspect of these that make them impossible to be recycled in many cases. So there's a lot of work to be done in that space. But I am, of course, a proponent of more design for reuse and design for refill rather than design for recycling. But we also need to be able to, you know, recycle some more valuable plastics that probably could be recycled, but the vast majority just aren't. Mm.
Dr. Kimberly Warner is a senior scientist at Oceana and author of the report Choked, Strangled, Drowned, The Plastics Crisis Unfolding in Our Oceans. Dr. Kara Lavender Law is research professor of oceanography at the Sea Education Association and lead author of the study detailing the United States' contribution of plastic waste to the land and ocean. And I hope you can take some time to read these reports because they're so, so important. Kimberly, let's talk about the Choked, Strangled, Drowned report, which looks at how plastic is affecting the oceans. And I have to say, when I first read the Guardian story about this, it just made me so sad to see the dolphin. It looked like there was one of those frisbees that you can kind of put your hand through the middle, and it was around the entire dolphin. It was just so hard to look at that. How did you go about conducting this study?
Yes, there are many sad cases assembled in this report. So we, you know, as we were launching our campaign on plastics, I was wondering, like many, you know, we've seen news articles about some whale turning up on a beach somewhere with its belly full of plastic. And I just didn't know how many animals were affected in U.S. waters. Had anybody tried to tally that number up? And despite searching for it, I couldn't find an answer for it. And so we set about trying to collect that data. And fortunately for the United States, we have two very bedrock environmental laws, the Endangered Species Act and Marine Mammal Protection Act, that compel the government to assess whenever an animal turns up in distress or dead on a shore to try and figure out how it died and whether there was any human interaction. So they collect this data on these animals that turn up in the U.S. and all the animals in our report are covered under those two laws. And then they compile them into databases. So our first job was reaching out to the government databases and people that collect this information. And then we also reached out to many of their partner organizations. As you can imagine, it's a very large task to monitor all the beaches and waters of the U.S. to see if any animal is in distress. So the government relies on a huge network of partners like Aquarius, private wildlife organization, turtle responders, and universities that are permitted then to work with these animals and either help rehabilitate them or try and figure out why they died. So we queried a lot of these organizations in addition to the government over a period starting last year through this late spring of this year to get the data that are now compiled in this report. And of course, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, please, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you know, we were trying to collect this data over the same time we were experiencing the first wave of this pandemic. And so a lot of groups that originally had wanted to respond or perhaps could have responded were not able to because they were going through a lot of hardship themselves with, you know, having to close their doors and reduce staff and that type of thing. So I know our estimate that we have in here is an underestimate of probably the true number of marine mammals and sea turtles that have been affected by plastic.
You get very specific in this report, and if we can just go over some of these case studies. In the report, we learned that in Florida, a Kemp's Ridley sea turtle was found entangled in a plastic bag that had become filled with sand. The bag wrapped around the animal's neck, and scientists believe the animal drowned due to the weight of the bag or suffocated from the entanglement. In Virginia, a female sea whale, SEI, I had not heard of this before, and then learned that it's actually a baleen whale. You report that this whale actually swallowed a DVD case, which lacerated her stomach and led to gastric ulcers, harming her ability to find food. I mean, this one was just to picture this, swallowing a DVD case.
Yeah, there are just some heartbreaking descriptions of what plastic is doing inside some of these animals. That poor sea whale actually got hit by a boat and probably died from that boat ship strike. But if it hadn't, the lacerations inside its digestive system from the DVD case probably would have done it in eventually. That was one of the sadder cases that is in our report, but there are many, many descriptions of cases that just, were hard to stomach sometimes.
Very hard. Another one in South Carolina, a sea turtle center found almost 60 pieces of plastic that a loggerhead sea turtle defecated during its rehabilitation. So 60 pieces of plastic in a sea turtle.
Right. And it can take sometimes, up to 3 weeks for a sea turtle to pass all the plastic that's in its system. So, if you look at pictures of what was inside a sea turtle, I think there's some in our report. A lot of it, you can't even describe what kind of plastic it is, right? Because by the, I would say half the cases, the plastic original plastic item had broken up into pieces, some of which were jagged, some of which were smooth, you couldn't tell what the original plastic package was that the animal ingested. And the rest of the items, the other half, were cases of things that we use in our everyday lives that we would never thought would have ended up inside an endangered or threatened animal. Such as sponges forks, that kind
all
of thing.
Right, all kinds of items. Kara, given that you follow this issue so closely and really look at the waste and the junk that's sent abroad, what are your thoughts about this Oceana study?
Unfortunately, it's not at all surprising. Looking at the photos in the report, I'm not surprised, but I am sickened by them. I mean, there's one of a turtle that's passing a balloon string. But even thinking closer to home, we're one of those families that got a COVID puppy, and I've seen my puppy eat plastic toys and plastic hairbands and pass them. We are surrounded by these materials, and they don't break down in the environment except into smaller pieces, as Kimberly mentioned. A lot of the pieces that I think it was the turtle had passed are just these small fragments, and you don't really know where they came from, what type of item, or where geographically this turtle might have picked up these little bits of plastic. But as we look more closely all across different ecosystems, and as we look for smaller and smaller particles, we are finding that these plastics really are everywhere.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Dr. Kara Lavender Law is a research professor of oceanography at the Sea Education Association in Woods Hole, Massachusetts, and is lead author of a study looking at the United States' contribution of plastic waste to the oceans worldwide. Dr. Kimberly Warner is a senior scientist at Oceana and author of the report Choked, Strangled, Drowned, The Plastics Crisis Unfolding in Our Oceans. This is Your Calls One Planet series, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today it's our One Planet series, and we are talking about United States and the plastic pollution that corporations, produce and that citizens buy and then throw away. Dr. Kimberly Warner is senior scientist at Oceana and author of the report Choked, Strangled, Drowned, The Plastics Crisis Unfolding in Our Oceans. Dr. Kara Lavender Law is a research professor of oceanography at the Sea Education Association and lead author of the study, The United States Contribution of Plastic Waste to Land and Ocean. And let's hear from a few callers. We also have a number of emails. Let's go to Harvey in Berkeley. Hi, R. Harvey. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rose. And this is a great show. I really appreciate it. Proposition 65 here in California states that petroleum and their byproducts both make us sick and give us cancer. And unfortunately, most plastic is manufactured out of petroleum. And secondly, petroleum-based plastic will take up to 1,000 years before they actually decompose. The good news is that hemp plastic, known as bioplastic, is lightweight, biodegradable, and only takes 3 to 6 months to fully decompose. And it can be totally recyclable indefinitely. So I feel that we have to move to hemp in terms of creating bioplastics and away from petroleum plastics.
Well, thank you so much for that call. Kimberly, what are your thoughts on this, and what would it take to get the single-use corporations to actually embrace this material?
Well, I'm not familiar with the products that your caller just now mentioned. I've not seen the hemp products, but some of the other bioplastics can present some problems, I would say, that we have to move carefully in that. And not just replace one throwaway item with another throwaway item. Most of the bioplastics that I've seen data on don't really degrade in the ocean. So they can also break up and behave, you know, like plastic once they're there. As far as I know, there has not been a new agreed upon standard for marine biodegradation that would allow these products to degrade in the kind of cold, inhospitable environment of the ocean. Some of these bio-derived plastics or polymers can be degraded inside an industrial composting facility. But in that case, you need to separate those out from what you'd normally put in your recycling bin or in the trash and make sure that they go to an industrial compost facility, if there is even one in your neighborhood. So I know there's a lot of research going on in this field, and we have to be careful, I think, with some of these products that we don't use the same kinds of harmful chemicals that were used, like, say, in plastic to give them their properties. Some of these chemicals they add to the bioplastics and other things can be as kind of hazardous as some of the chemicals in regular plastic. So I think we need to think really carefully about how these products are used, how they're going to be disposed of properly in their afterlife, and that less harmful chemicals are used on those products as we move forward.
What would you add, Kara?
I think Kimberly did a nice job addressing that. It's, you know, the topic of bioplastics is a fairly complicated one, and we need to tease it apart carefully, because bioplastics can refer to either the feedstock that the material is made of. So rather than petroleum sources, could be coming from some kind of biologically derived material, such as hemp that your caller mentioned. But some traditional plastics that are normally made from petroleum can be made from biological sources and still behave the same way. That is, not at all biodegrade. So bioplastics, some bioplastics may not be derived from biological sources, but might biodegrade in very specific environmental settings, as Kimberly described. So we do have to be very careful. I think we don't want to think of the environment as a waste disposal option. We don't want to think about it as a place that trash should end up. So moving a little bit higher up, the best, most environmentally sound solution is to not produce the waste at all.
Right. Well, thank you for calling in, Harvey. Let's go next to Carlos in San Francisco. Hi, Carlos. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thank you so much for this informative program. So I wanted to ask a question about the country's largest online retailer, which is Amazon. Mm-hmm. Usually my deliveries have a volume of packaging that exceeds the volume of the purchased product. So my specific question is, what are the actual financial incentives for large retailers to use more responsible packaging?
Yeah, great question. And Kimberly, we didn't mention this when we talked about how COVID is changing things. And now that people are staying home as much as possible, more people are shopping online. How would you address the question from Carlos, specifically about Amazon and other major online corporations?
I think all of these big corporations value their customers. And if their customers asked for plastic-free packaging choices when they're being delivered, that the big corporations would probably respond favorably. So as if you are like a preferred customer with these these big corporations, why not, as you're ordering, say, I would like this not to come with, you know, excess plastic packaging. I would prefer a plastic-free choice. We can use our voices, and I think companies pay attention when we ask for something. I know a lot of these companies are mindful of their sustainability and social responsibility and these types of things. So I think they listen to their customers and would probably be receptive. It's worth a try.
What are your thoughts on that, Kara?
I think that's completely true. We have power as consumers. And we do have to consider the environmental footprint generally when we make our buying choices, whether that's online or in a brick and mortar store. But there are also policy levers that we can use. So there's a policy kind of philosophy called extended producer responsibility that I know is being pursued in several states, including the state of Maine, where I live, about actually charging the producers who provide the packaging a fee to help with the waste management of the packaging that's ending up in municipal waste streams and often paid for by the taxpayer. So there are lots of different flavors of extended producer responsibility. This is a set of policies that have been used extensively in Germany, for example, for a long time. And we've even had some state-level policies in the United States about like latex paint or batteries or sort of other often hazardous items that we want the people producing the product to take responsibility for. So not only is this a potentially a cost-saving measure for the municipalities or for the citizens paying taxes, but the idea is also that it would incentivize those companies to think of different ways to package their products so that less waste or less harmful waste is produced.
We're getting a lot of emails from listeners who say, why can't we just outlaw many of the uses of certain kinds of plastics that cannot be recycled? And Kimberly, one of your colleagues at Oceana had a piece called Amazon Packages Are Awash in Plastic. How much of it is actually recyclable? And they looked at things like the bubble-lined plastic bags, the regular plastic bags, the air pillows, the bubble-lined paper mailers, and so much of this stuff just cannot be recycled. So at what point do politicians need to stand up to these companies and say, if you can't recycle this, you can't use it?
Well, I think that's an excellent point. And of course, we do support strong policies, both at the local, state, and federal level to limit these kinds of harmful products that can't be recycled and can't be reused. So a good example of that is at the national level, the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act that was introduced this last year. And then you've had some good, strong legislation in California as well. And you know, even though it went down narrowly, I guess this year in California, there's another chance next session to pass something that's even stronger and better. So I would say I agree with the policy solutions. There are so many products that are labeled recyclable, as Kara illustrated earlier, that really just don't, in reality, are never going to be recycled. A lot of these films, et cetera, that, you know, bags and things and the things that are like the paper mailers with the plastic inside, you know, these are just impossible for any compound to deal with adequately.
Kara, what would you add?
I think this is a really complex issue that's going to require lots of different solution pieces, and policy has to be one of those. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of banning products, I think we have to do that judiciously. I think there are instances in which the use of plastics is unnecessary. There are other replacements that can be used, and it's kind of a no-brainer. And an example of that is the Microbead Free Waters Act that passed at the end of the Obama administration, where plastic microbeads can no longer be used in wash-off cosmetic products, so things like facial scrubs, because we don't need plastic in our face scrubs or our toothpastes, right? And so that was kind of an easy one, and I don't think it was met with too much resistance. But we can't ban everything, and you know, we have to think carefully about what we choose to use that lever for. If there's a particularly harmful, either to human health or to the environment, type of plastic, then we might consider banning that or a particular product. But you know, we won't. It can't all be done with policy. It can't all be done with bans. It can't all be done by consumers. It can't all be done by corporations. We all have to play a part in solving this.
Well, and as your report points out, Kara, on average, Americans generate nearly twice as much plastic waste per capita as residents of the EU. And I'll read that again. Americans generate nearly twice as much plastic waste per capita as residents of the EU. I mean, that is a major difference.
It is, and I wish I knew why. I don't know if we just buy more stuff and throw it away. This is a question that's been raised by this study that, you know, the amount of plastic waste that each of us in the United States produces per day is nearly double that of other highly developed countries in Europe. I don't know why that number is so high, but it is.
And so this is something that people need to really think about. As you said earlier, you know, buying less is obviously one major solution. Reusing, we're getting a lot of emails from listeners who say, can you please talk about the importance of reusing and how to live less with plastic? We'll talk about that in a minute, but I want to make sure we have enough time to go over the study that you authored, Kara. This is really important. We've been doing a lot of shows about the United States exporting their waste to China. And then China said, you know, we're not taking this anymore because we can't deal with all of it. And as your report points out, a lot of it is just not recyclable. So just give us a kind of a thumbnail sketch about what you all were looking at in this report. What questions did you want to answer?
Right. Well, the report really followed up on an earlier study led by my colleague Jenna Jambach that was published in 2015, estimating the total amount of plastic waste generated on land that enters the ocean in a single year. And a consequence of that study was that it really highlighted that countries that have rapidly developing economies without the waste management infrastructure needed to handle the increased waste they're producing, that those countries have a major leakage problem of plastic waste into the environment, as we discussed a little bit earlier. But an overlooked result of that study was that the United States actually ranked number 20 out of a list of 192 countries. And that was assuming that we properly manage all of our waste with the exception of a small percentage, 2% of waste generated that was littered. And we knew that that estimate needed refining because, of course, we know that there is littering in the U.S. We know that there's illegal dumping that happens in the U.S. Not everything is captured in our garbage cans and garbage trucks. But we also wanted to try to put a number on the amount of plastics collected for recycling, the amount of plastics put in our blue bin that were exported to be reprocessed. And so that's what we did. We found that more than 50% of the plastic waste collected for recycling in the U.S. in 2016 was shipped, as you said, mostly to China and Hong Kong. And we estimated how much of that was likely to have been disposed of in the environment in these countries that have a hard time or had a hard time, at least in 2016, managing their waste. So you know, part of the reason we were exporting this waste is that so much of this material is little of no value here. And something that didn't come up earlier in the conversation about recycling is the cost of virgin plastics, which the vast majority of are still being made from petroleum and natural gas, which are readily available and very cheap. So one major issue is that there is a market challenge for recycling, and that it's much cheaper to make new plastic than to try to collect and separate and clean and reprocess plastic waste that into, you know, in the recycling stream. So that was one reason we were exporting this waste. You know, now that China has largely closed the doors to this, we have seen our exports be more broadly distributed across the globe, but we have exported less since then. The amount of plastic waste that we've exported has gone down quite a lot. But I think we don't really know what's happening to it in the U.S. today. Is most of that simply being diverted to landfills or to combustion incineration plants, waste to energy plants? There've been anecdotes of municipalities sort of stockpiling some of this material, waiting for the market to grow again for maybe domestic handling of materials. So I think we're at a real point in the U.S. where we have to think critically about how we're going to deal with this waste. You know, we're not going to stop making plastic waste entirely. I think, as I said earlier, we should make less. But the waste that we do produce, we have to take full responsibility for. And if we export it, we have to track that and make sure it's handled properly. But even better if we can handle it within our own borders.
And what struck you about how U.S. plastic is really affecting other countries, especially the plastic that cannot be recycled?
Well, I mean, many of these countries, again, you know, they were sort of willing to take in our waste because they did find economic value. Perhaps the labor to sort it was less, or they don't have the resources to make new as readily. So we're taking advantage of that. But as a consequence, you know, in places that have a hard time managing their own waste, we're now adding to that burden, which is not, you know, has all kinds of consequences, environmental, but also ethical consequences. So I think we kind of knew this was happening, and we felt it was important to put a number on that and to recognize it and own up to it.
Hmm. You know, another study came out from the journal Marine Pollution Bulletin. International scientists concluded that plastic pollution, particularly single-use plastic water bottles, collected harmful bacteria and microorganisms which flourish in carbon dioxide-rich environments. And as a result, this plastic pollution is increasing ocean acidification. So Kimberly, I mean, at this point, we have so much data, all of these incredible, important studies that are coming out. And the question is, at a time when the plastics industry is doing whatever it can to continue on this path, what do we do about it? As you both said, there needs to be a multi-pronged approach here, but it just continues to get worse. So I'd like to ask both of you, what really is at the top of your list, like say two major changes you'd like to see? Because Kimberly, another very important fact that comes from Oceana says that half of the plastic in our planet's history was produced just in the past 15 years.
Yes, this is the unfortunate trajectory of plastic generation and plastic waste generation. It just continues, is projected to continue to exponentially increase as it has in the past decade or two. So, you know, we do need to, I think, pass strong policies to deal with this. There's many approaches that have been discussed here on this program, but also really adopt more reuse and refill types of economies. I think there's a lot of innovative businesses that are trying to adopt these kinds of practices. We had a report out of our organization on refillable bottles that it could actually reduce a whole bunch of bottle trash that goes into the oceans and others if you know, one adopts the same sort of leakage rates that are reported in the literature. So I don't know why industry moved away from those. They're very popular in some countries. We could bring back more refillable solutions here. I think that there's many uses you can get out of a bottle before you have to recycle it or crush it or do it. So that is, you know, the basic idea behind our sustainability messaging is that you reduce and reuse before you recycle, right? So there's a lot of good work going on in California, upstream solutions to this problem, where people have been able to adopt reusable foodware and serviceware. And so I'd say adopting the passing strong languages, legislation, and then adopting reusable and refillable solutions are the things that come to mind for me.
What about you, Kara?
Well, I think I tend to think on sort of two different timescales. So in the short term, in the United States, I think we have to improve the way we're managing our plastic waste. So whether that means building recycling plants, because honestly, we're not going to see a decrease in the materials that we use so much of today for a long time. So we need to invest and sort out how we're going to deal with this immense amount of waste that we produce currently while simultaneously working on exactly those reduction type measures that Kimberly just discussed. But then in the long term, I think we have to rely on some good innovation and careful thinking about perhaps different materials or different products or different mechanisms to accomplish the tasks that we're using plastics for today. So if we're designing new materials or new products, let's build in the design for how to collect those things at the end of their life and how we plan to manage those in an environmentally sound manner. But it takes time to develop either new materials or new solutions or new ways of doing things. So I think we have to really work on both of those fronts simultaneously.
And we have a number of questions from listeners about how to live with less plastic. Kara, do you have any tips?
I think carefully ask yourself every time you purchase something. First of all, do you even need to purchase it? I mean, that's the first thing, is can you live without whatever that thing is? Trying to buy in bulk, trying to bring containers maybe post-COVID that can be filled in a bulk store, or you know, your reusable coffee mug or water bottle, those kinds of things. But for me, I think I've been carrying a reusable water bottle for decades and reusable shopping bags. I'm sure people know about that. I think more importantly, we need to think about borrowing or renting or just doing without. In other words, consuming less at the start so that we produce less waste.
What would you add, Kimberly?
Oh, I agree with that entirely. I'm the queen of reusing everything. And my grandmother that lived through the Depression raised me. We didn't throw out a single thing. We washed and reused all the foil in our household. I mean, I grew up, I'm old enough to remember a time when, you know, plastic wasn't everywhere. And, you know, we seemed to get by without it just fine. So I think that it's not going to be rocket science on how we can return to a lifestyle where we don't rely 100% on plastic for everything in our lives.
Well, to your point, Selena just wrote in and said, I'm so proud of my mom, who is always very outspoken about people not using plastic. She always carries reusable cups, containers, bags, napkins, silverware. She calls stores or talks to management if she sees them selling deli or bakery items in plastic containers. And the health food store started selling those items in returnable glass jars. Thank you for that email, Selena. Well, thank you both for all of your great work. Thank you for joining us. This is something that's really near and dear to our hearts, and we would love to have you back on a future show. Dr. Kimberly Warner is a senior scientist at Oceana, and I hope you can take some time to read this important report and really share it with others, because sometimes people just forget. It's easy to go to one of these massive stores and buy, you know, huge vats of water and big boxes and bottles of stuff that maybe they just don't need. The report is called Choked, Strangled, Drowned: The Plastics Crisis Unfolding in Our Oceans. Kimberly, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks for your work.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Dr. Kara Lavender Law is a research professor of oceanography at the Sea Education Association and lead author of the study detailing the United States' contribution of plastic waste to land and ocean. Kara, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and thanks for your time on this important topic.
Thank you. You can find more information about these reports at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for keeping our studio running. You can also go to yourcallradio.org to find our past shows. And if you have any show ideas or guest ideas, you can email us yourcall@kalw.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.